Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome to Needle Exchange, conversations on the art of thread. I'm Jamie Chalmers, aka Mr. X-Stitch, and today I'm interviewing Martha Hussey, someone who is random in all the right ways. Martha trained in fine art at St. Martin's and later dove into an art therapy diploma during lockdown, discovering how stitch can quiet the mind and surface truth. In this first half of our Needle Exchange, we get into the meditative mechanics of embroidery, why the back of the work matters as much as the front, and how humour and the sexy stitch series emerged alongside tufted wall pieces and hairy latch hook portraits. We also trace the evolution from painting to thread palettes and that pivotal do something creative for 15 minutes a day moment that reignited her practice. Conversations with multidisciplinary artists really float my boat. And I had a great chat with Marcia Bennett-Mail in Needle Exchanges 49 and 50, so be sure to check them out. And if you enjoy the show, be sure to subscribe on your podcasting platform so you don't miss out on part two coming next week. In the meantime, enjoy Martha. She's awesome. I'll see you next week. So one thing that is interesting about you is that you've become an art therapist, correct?
I did a diploma in art therapy. I'm not doing it currently, but I did do the training, and it kind of entered into lockdown. So we had to do all the therapy sessions on Zoom and a lot of the coursework, and it became, something completely different, but it was absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, and it's something I'm not overly familiar with, but I'm interested to get your take on it as someone who has an artistic practice and then also understands the benefit of artistic therapy. I wonder if you could like make the case for it, because sometimes I think people think it's a bit waffy.
Exactly, and I don't think I ever thought of it. I think the way I viewed, or what I thought art therapy was you sit down and you just do a painting, you know, like I didn't think that much of it. I didn't really understand it until I did the course. And I had actually, the reason I'd got interested in, I've always been interested in therapy and, you know, psychology and human behaviour and face reading and all kinds of like things like that. So it's sort of been on the radar, but I was at the Turner Contemporary in Margate, and there was a exhibition of prison art. And I just found it absolutely fascinating to think what was going on in these people's heads. And the sort of wide range of work that was there. And I thought, I'd absolutely love to work in a prison and be an art teacher there or something. And that got me looking into therapy and art therapy courses in London. And that's when I just chose to do the diploma. And there were elements of it that were very uncomfortable for me. I'm not into dancing, theatre, the elements that you would describe.
Improvised comedy. Hey, Martha.
Yeah, let's
turn your rage into a chicken.
Let's talk to a puppet and I just was like, oh my God, I'm so out of my skin, don't want to be here. It was a real push to make me do that. I'm also, I hate talking in public. I hate, there's so many things that I found very uncomfortable, but I guess that also helps you grow. But it did have, basically the course work, the books, there was endless books by my bed, like stacks and stacks of books that we had to read, and that I found absolutely fascinating. There was so much I learned, and you had to have quite a lot of therapy during it, as you would do training to be a therapist. You have how many hours you have to have completed, and I learned so much about myself, and I think, I don't know, I used to be like more of a painter. That would be my medium until I moved into stitch. And I think, I don't know, the amount I created in the past, 4 years, I sort of just got completely consumed by it. And I realized, I think, without realizing, it's a type of therapy and you completely get lost in it. And I just now, I kind of find myself needing to do it wherever. Like, I'll be away on holiday and I'm like, yes, but I need to what can I make, what can I get into, what can I stitch and stuff. And I suppose it also helped me in the situation that I was in at the time, in quite a bad relationship, to realise things weren't right and that isn't the norm, and to get out, basically. And that was a real, like, it kind of could change my life, the whole course, literally, and everything. So, yeah, fascinating.
I think it sounds quite healthy that if something happens, you want to process it straight away, because that to me suggests, like, I'll cry at stuff on the telly, don't know, Great British Bake Off final, any episode of RuPaul's Drag Race. And I feel like that's emotionally healthy now, because I'm not keeping anything in. And I guess it's the same thing, isn't it? You've processed a lot through the craft, and so now it's a nice throughput.
Yeah, definitely. It's also a way of getting, I mean, I've always been a massive overthinker, worrying I go over and over and over things, and to sit, which many people have said about embroidery or weaving or anything in that world, is it is such a meditative process, and you just sit, you get lost in it, you're literally focused on stitch after stitch after stitch. And I think doing that has really helped me, like, calm my mind down at times. And it's also great for, like, journeys or killing time or whatever, you know, like, you just, instead of staring at your phone all the time like we do now, it's a way of just getting lost in something. So,
did you have many clients as a therapist?
I didn't. I wasn't. I did the course. I didn't do the...
Right.
I didn't become a therapist. At the time, it was going to cost like $100,000 or something stupid to... No, I think it was about 80. It was a huge amount of money, basically, to be fully qualified as an art therapist. And a lot of people on my course just said they wouldn't be able to, including me. I just was like, this is not something that... Because you also have to basically give up work, because your course goes from, like, a part-time to pretty much full-time, and you're paying for therapy, and you're paying for the course, and, you know, all this money, which is such a shame, because especially during lockdown and after lockdown, because it was art child therapy that I did, there was so much need for therapy, especially for children, especially, you know, in that environment that we all got put in lockdown. And it was just such a shame that it became such an expensive thing to train in. You know, like, it's such a shame that sort of stopped a lot of people. So, yeah, I didn't actually go into being a therapist, but it has helped me.
It sounds a bit like one of those multi-level marketing schemes, though, doesn't it? You know what I mean?
Exactly, yeah. You're like, how does this work?
And then they get you. So I have a pretty strong thesis about the meditative power of cross-stitch. And when you meditate, the point is when your mind wanders, you're meant to come back to center. And so when it comes to stitching stuff, you're coming back to center at least once a second, because you're looking where you're putting the needle. So in that moment, you know, there is that direct connection. And, you know, I was saying before, like, I haven't cross-stitched something in ages, but I was listening to a podcast the other day where someone was saying about they used to do a daily meditation only for 15 minutes. And I was like, you know what? Maybe I should just do a little bit of daily cross-stitch for 15 minutes, because it will do that meditation thing. It will give me that little in. But then I was thinking about what you said about, you know, your discomfort with, I don't know, jazz dance as a form of therapy or whatever. Like, I would maintain that one of the secret sources about embroidery and textiles is the slowness and how that's really important. Yeah. But I do wonder whether some people are just going to be better. Some people, the therapy is going to be improv comedy, or, I don't know, smashing shit up and then turning it into a mosaic or something. I don't, you know, like, whether it's horses for courses or whether actually the slow meditative is the best practice. I just wonder if you've got an opinion.
Well, one of the things you learn on the course in the art therapy was, because there were, was it four or five different types? So there's clay, puppets, there's poetry, there's, I don't know, like, a lot of different kind of mediums that you can use if you were working with a client. And it became obvious that you have to be very careful with what you choose to, in kind of what their issue was, you know, like, so you wouldn't use clay, for example, with like sexual abuse, because that can often, like, the kind of tactile nature of that and what it kind of brings out and feelings and stuff. There's certain things that are like no-nos. And I found that quite fascinating with, like you say, it could be one person therapy could be fascinating and brilliant for them. Another thing could be completely you know, traumatizing for someone, or it all depends on the individual. Mm. So yeah, that, you know, someone might have quite, you know, someone might find it absolutely brilliant doing interpretive dance, and someone might just want to be completely silent in the corner making something. But
yeah, I mean, I guess with a lot of practices, dance, sport and stuff, there's still that in the moment, isn't it? The in the moment, yeah, still remaining like the thing that underpins it all. So I suppose maybe, yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's the thing. It doesn't, like, there's many paths to God. I guess there's many paths to being in the moment or whatever, you know, and it is whatever kind of works. But can you remember then the first time? Because, I mean, you've been crafty like your whole life, off and on, haven't you, really? So, but then, like, looking back to your Insta, may not be the single point of truth on everything, but it seems like you started doing rugs as the sort of stitchy thing.
Well, no, that was, I started embroidery first. So basically, my whole life growing up with artistic family and, you know, kind of been in that world since I was little, always drawing, always, you know, drawing like diaries when we were on holiday and sort of, it was, that was just what I used with, you know, constantly making. I went to St. Martin's, did my degree in fine art there, and that was when I came out as a like painting mainly. Probably, I mean, like way before the Instagram, so this is probably why.
Back in the good old days, you just do what you like.
Technology. And then it was years and years ago that I had a therapy session. I had actually hypnotherapy at one point, and it was to do with like some fears and things that I had. And I remember him telling me or talking to me about talking about the art, and he said, you light up when you talk about art, why don't you do more of this? Because I'd had a long period where I wasn't doing it, and then I was talking about things not being mobile, like, well, I can't do it because I'll need this and I'll need that. And he said, okay, it was something about doing something like you said, 15 minutes a day, just do something small, 15 minutes a day, something creative, and see how it makes you feel. So I got threads, and I was doing like, I was making little silly fit, you know, like nothing in particular, but like just the act of it. And then I just didn't stop from there. And I was basically doing embroidery as threads, as I would with painting. So now I have palettes of threads and I just use it. It's not a cross stitch. It's not a type of embroidery technique. It's literally just like in and out, and it's like I'm using it as a paint. So then that became my thing. And I was basically embroidering for a long time. And then I got frustrated with like how long it took to do things, and people thinking something small is just, oh, will you just do me something small? Or, oh, I just want a little thing like this. And I don't realize it takes you like 5 days because it's so tiny. And then I discovered the tufting gun probably in like lockdown, before that, something like that. And I thought, great, this is a way of like scaling up. I can do these pieces a lot quicker. Little did I know that obviously it still was quite a lot of work goes into doing those. But yeah, I did a large scale, and now I've kind of gone a 180, and I'm doing some pieces that are using the tufting gun that's like a raised woven section. Then the flat section is hand painted. And then I do the embroideries as like little appliques that I put on at the end. And then that gives me all the elements of like real, tiny detail, and you know, layered up.
Kind of like a textile collage or something.
Yeah, and that came about because I did a commission for a restaurant in Queen's Park called Don't Tell Dad, and it was a 6-seater table that they wanted embroidered, that people would put glass on and then people would eat on the table. So they had 3 weeks till they were opening the restaurant, and I was like, a 6-seater table with like fully embroidered, you know, that's never going to happen. And we were like working out ways that we could kind of mix it all up. And that's sort of how that came about. And since then, that's been quite a regular popular piece.
Do you enjoy switching between the media? Does that keep things fresh?
Yeah, I think one of the things that there's always so much going on, like I've got tufted things, I've got painted things, I've got hand, latch hook, big hairy portraits, I've got like painting still, going back to all of that, I always thought, oh, well, to be respected or whatever, you have to be recognizable for what you do in one form, like
you, all I do is stitch plates, or all I do is this thing, and then that's who you know, that's what you have to have as an identity. But I actually just love the mixture of everything, being able to, you know, maybe see something completely different and learn how to make. I've taught myself all of this, and it's like I'll see something, want to know how to make it, how can I achieve that, and then I learn it, and then I perfect it. And so, yeah, I think it's important to have all these different elements. Yeah.
You do seem to be a bit of a, it's not the right word, but like an omni threat, or like some people are like triple threats or whatever, but you're more than that, because I see you've got different media, and then within those different media, it feels like you do different types of storytelling as well. And then there's a whole thing about the back of the work, and you do these pieces. I wrote down in my notes, I wrote the back of the work, pink sex stuff. I was like, I couldn't really categorize it any better than that.
Yeah.
But it does, because when I was looking back through your work, it felt for a while, and this, I've seen this happen, and I'm always interested in this, is the medium coincides with like the creative stream. So I remember talking to Marcia Bennett Mayo, who did textile portraits, but then also did sculpture out of stone. And I was interested in like, do the works, but they don't, I don't think, with her. I think there's a certain vocabulary she's using with the stone work, and then the portraits are something else, and you just cross between them. But you can't be pigeonholed quite as easy as that, slightly annoyingly.
I guess there's also, it's like elements of, again, feeling like now I'm feeling I'm more and more myself, and I'm bringing out the humour again, which is me. Like I need humour in my life, but I've always, again, thought, oh, you have to be really serious, or it has to be like a really beautiful image that people would, you know, respect in a way. But actually the humour in things, I think, needs to come out more. So I'm sort of ekes out in different areas of my life. Yeah, it is funny because I've actually got someone who's collected quite a few pieces of mine, and he messaged the other day and said, you know, my kids don't like the fact that there's two of you basically naked in the hallway, and it's like a giant rug that I've got. It's not naked, but it's like semi-naked. Mm. And it's like in a jungle. And his kid had said something like, well, one of them's happier than the other one, and it's because her top's too short and she's lost in a jungle or something. And I just thought, I love how these kids, he's like, I love this sexy print, or this like reverse stitched lady on all fours, but I don't know where I can hang it because my kids, you know. Yes, someone else called it sexy stitch.
That would skew differently on the old algorithms, wouldn't it? Slightly, if you started using that, I think.
Okay,
but so there is that. I mean, there's definite playfulness. I think playfulness is a good word to use for a lot of your stuff, because you've done like childlike pictures as well, haven't you?
Yeah, again, that's to do with like, you know, how lovely the naivety in children's drawings are, that we don't have to, it doesn't all have to be perfect. It doesn't all have to be, it's so much more freeing. And I did it because a friend had like some crumpled, you know, how you get like the kids' drawings that you've got attached to the fridge, and, you know, it's just like some old poster paint. And I thought, well, you know, she's quite a proud interior person. And so I hand stitched one of her kids' drawings on linen, and just thought it was a nice way of like saving it. And then I did the giant tufting wall hanging, which is a kid, like, well, just done with my left hand, but kids drawing with my other house of mid-century, because I'm obsessed with finding a wooden mid-century house somewhere, even though they all seem to be in deepest America somewhere. But yeah, it's also, when I was at school, my teachers used to sort of get frustrated with how detailed I was. I was so tiny and detailed, like everything had to be this tiny detail drawing, and they were like, just try and like loosen up and free, you know, get bigger. And it's funny to see now, because I think that reflects in how detailed I get with my embroideries, because I split my threads into six, so each thread is like the size of a hair, and then I embroider that into portraits so that you can get like the dot in an eye, but it's like the size of a needle, you know. It's so, I don't know why, but for some reason I've gone really, really tiny. And I've just basically gone back to what they said don't do. It's just like, yeah, no, I don't want to. I want to get really, really tiny and constrained. But then, yeah, also having the scale of doing large pieces.
Is that the trade-off? Like, you're pursuing the art of the craft, you know, tiny threads and all those kind of things, is just like you make it increasingly difficult for yourself because maybe the production process is part of the challenge. You know, maybe because you might be quite emotionally healthy now, so maybe the content isn't as challenging as it used to be. So you're like, right, I'll just ratchet up the tension in another direction.
Yeah, I do like a challenge. Yeah, maybe it's that. It's seeing like how far I can push myself in certain ways. I now wear glasses, which I never used to have to wear. Like, killed my eyes by going so detailed and stitching for so many.
There's no shame in a magnifying light, honestly. Daylight Company got very good range. You might be amazed.
Yeah.
What you're capable of. But I think it's interesting because as well, you can dwell in that precision. And, you know, some of the portraits that you've made that are almost that, they made with like French knots, they're like ridiculously small pieces of stitching, aren't they? I'm thinking of that one where you've got quite a lot of negative space as well in the piece.
Oh, yeah, that's a large piece, but that is using wool instead of threads. And yeah, that's one dot stitched at a time, so they're like little spots of yarn, and then when you kind of come back, it's it's a portrait.
And you give yourself permission to do that, and then you also give yourself permission to do like massive floppy rug face guy.
Yeah, and that I, because one of the things I absolutely love is, and I've used obviously in the Sophie Stitch series, but is the reverse. When I've finished a portrait and I or whatever I'm doing, and I turn it over, and you've got the messy threads and the knots and the chaos behind, and you see it's got so much more depth to it. I don't know, I find that kind of gorgeous, but I wouldn't want to have that displayed as the only thing, because equally the front is like the immaculate detail, you know. It's just like I don't know which one I prefer, but if I'm doing like a line drawing and it's in stitch, I will use the reverse side because I think that's far more interesting, and you never know what it's going to come out like. So where I drag across to stitch another part of the, like where the knee is, and then I'll go over to a shoulder without realizing I've created like a geometric shape at the back. So I find that quite interesting to see that how it's going to come out. And when I did the large hairy face using latch hook, I kind of wanted that element of messiness, like you're kind of blurring the identity of it. It's not perfect detail, it's just a big messy face. However, I didn't realize doing it that it would come out quite so like eerily, like the eyes are quite alive. I kind of thought it would be a bit more abstract than it came out, which is quite interesting. But yeah, that was just, again, stitch after stitch, but with little snippets of thread, of wool.
Because the back of the work, that's a testy subject for most needleworkers, isn't it? And obviously you do get those forms of embroidery, like shadow embroidery, where the craft is making the back as tidy as the front so that it can be viewed, or maybe it's on opaque material.
I can't get my head around that. When I see it, it's absolutely fascinating. I don't know how they do that.
But that's like really the only example, I think, you know, as craftspeople, I guess everyone wants to make their work a bit nicer. But this whole like old lady's tale of, you know, the back must be as tidy as the front, I've seen people just actively put off doing anything by being afraid of that phrase, you know. Was there a point when you accepted it, or just from the start were you always like, oh, the back's just as cool, and you were brave enough to show it?
Yeah, I think there was a time where I would be like, oh God, I better like frame it or put it in something that no one like buying it would see what the mess looks like at the back. And I would think that was because I did it wrong. Or I remember people who did know what they were doing and I was just teaching myself, they would kind of be fascinated by it. And I'd think, oh, don't look at how badly I've done the back. I don't really know what I'm doing. And but yeah, I think I just started to love the backs, how they, I don't know, sometimes when I go between the eyes, and then it becomes like almost like a scratched out, like a drawn out a line across the eyes at the back, it just seems more interesting. It's also like so unconscious. Like, I mean, unconscious. Like, I'm not purposely putting the threads anywhere. I don't know what I'm doing at the back. Because
yeah, it's unintentional, isn't it? Yeah.
Unintentional, yeah. So that I find quite interesting.
There's a Diane Mayer is a cross-stitch artist who stitches on photos. She takes photos, for instance, of I've interviewed her. I should be able to go, Needle Exchanges episode so-and-so and such and such.
But, yeah, yeah.
But like she'd stitch, for instance, pictures of the Berlin Wall, and she would use cross stitch to disappear the wall, right? So she'd take a photo, she'd cross stitch over a space and perhaps stitch what was behind it, but in a pixelated format, right? So the process in and of itself is pretty gangster because she's stitching on a photograph, she's getting the color and the pixelation so that you can understand what's going on behind. And I exhibited her work once at this thing with the National Trust. And what was badass was the fact that she had glass on the back and all the threads just hung. She didn't even tie them off or anything. So you looked at the back of her work and it was like this waterfall just of all these threads coming out. I was like, oh, my God. I was like, that's really brave. You know, we tried to do one where you could have a look at both sides just so that we could make old ladies faint, maybe put some cushions on the floor to protect them from the shock of it all or something.
Yeah.
It's just like... It's fascinating. One of the thoughts I had looking at yours, particularly the pink pieces. So how many pink pieces are there, the naughty ones, should we say?
Oh, there were two to start off with, which I did those before I did any embroidery, like years and years and years and years and years ago. And right. It was like, oh, I wonder what I could, I'll just, instead of doing a line drawing, I'm just going to stitch literally a line on this canvas. So I painted the canvas in pink gloss. It was kind of around the time I think I was fascinated with like Agent Provocateur. I love the pink and black. And I did those and I had a series of them in a shop in Islington and they all sold. And I was like, oh, well, they're really popular. And I'd completely forgotten that I'd done them. And I was clearing out something and I found one. And so I started doing some more recently. And it's fascinating that I've spent months on pieces that I'm so engrossed in, and yet people love the things that take like a lot less, you know. Oh, it's a line drawing, but oh, I love that one, you know. You never know, but I think there is that, I don't know, like female form, it's a nice subject to do. I guess I've now done a series where I've just photographed myself in weird positions and doing things or undressing, because I think the shapes of the body when you're pulling something over your head, or you know, like that kind of side of thing, and then stitched a series, and then I recently did Bon Appetit, where it's a cross stitched tea towel that says Bon Appetit, and I've done the woman on all fours because I thought that'd be funny.
Honestly, my entire career has started with the thought of I thought that would be funny. So that's always a quite good way to go about it.
I like
the
idea.
So the line drawing, the front side, if you like, is that a fairly faithful rendition of the image then? Does that look like what it's intended?
Yeah, the line drawing, yeah.
But then you deliberately show the back.
Yeah.
And what I like about that is there's like this, like, our outer appearance and our inner thoughts, like it feels like the dirty, naughty, twisty, turny bit of it is almost like this representation of the dark inside of us or something.
Yeah. Know? And yet you put on a perfect, you know, like a presentable persona on the other side, like the side that's like the correct side, how you should appear, how you should.
And I think the squirreliness of the back of it kind of adds to that tension, right? Because in some ways, if you just showed a picture of a woman on all fours and you just did a line drawing of it, it's like, that's fine. That's kind of been done. It's a little bit played out, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And also there was, without intending, there was, you know, again, where it's connected at the back sometimes, where I haven't realised because I'm just focusing on what I'm stitching. And it almost looks tied up. And then it's this whole, like, you know, bound restraint sort of, you know.
Do you ever do that thing where you go, yes, and that was completely the intention. I was, you know, like when you accidentally do something. I once did a thing. It was an exhibition to do with aprons, and they were on display at a place in Cardiff. Jesus, I wish I could remember the details right. But for some reason, they invited me to do one of these aprons, lots of other people doing them, genuine talents. And the only thing I could think of was I thought, I'll just do an X, and I'll make it look like it's been cut. So it kind of looked like sort of bloodied. So it was almost like someone just slashed the piece of thing and the blood was running out. And I was like, that's fine. And I got it stitched. But then what happened was, because it was an apron that went around your waist, and because I'd done this like blood red X in the middle of it, it turned out that I was making a deep statement about domesticity and the female, you know, how women are unconsciously abused by the societal diaspora around them. And I was like, absolutely. I was like, 100%. I just went, oh my God. They were like, that's a really interesting comment. I went, I'm glad you think so, because I was not planning that. So.
Exactly. It's like bring me back to St. Martin's Crypts, where they'd be like, why would you have created this? And then you have to like come up with some big, well, you know, the story behind it is that I hated all of that. I'm, you know, never the conceptual artist. That's what they loved at the time. And I just painstakingly, you know, paint pixelated portraits, or like, you know, each square. And they'd be like, oh, God, Martha's just been 3 months painting this, and we wanted her to like challenge herself. And then the person next to you would put like a mug on a table and go, it speaks for itself. And that's what they've done for the past month. And you're like, what? You haven't made anything. You haven't given.
It does. I guess it's quite nice to reflect back on that. And particularly now you're doing things that are just for fun. You just did a thing because you thought it was funny or whatever. That must feel much more natural.
A bit more freeing. Yeah, exactly. It doesn't have to be. I think that's the other thing about bringing out the humour these days now, rather than what I felt like I had to do before, was, you know, just like nothing, not everything has to be so serious. And like the world is so stressful and serious now, that just having a bit of a playful outlet. And, you know, I think that's the thing. I think I always used to also think that I, to be, you know, taken seriously, I had to create serious work, and it's just not the case. Like,
I keep telling, I've got a couple of my next door neighbors, Keith and Viv, lovely couple, both in their mid-70s. Every time I see Keith, he's moaning about Donald Trump. And I keep trying to say to him that he should watch something like Spring Watch as a current affairs program, because it would be much better for his soul than watching actual current affairs programs. You know, there's like a time and a place for this stuff, isn't there? It doesn't all have to be all like deadly serious.
Exactly. Yeah.
I wanted to just dial back to something you casually mentioned, where you were like, the line pieces were the first ones you did, and then you had them in a shop in Islington, and they all sold out, and you just kind of like, you let that go very easily. But I'm interested as to how you went and managed to get them in a shop in Islington straight away.
I think I just went in and said, would you be interested in having these? Yeah, I did have a few. I think at the time I'd had like an exhibition of dogs that I painted portraits in a pub that I worked in. They were literally like painted on a piece of wood with a, you know, like, if I think about it now, it probably, again, probably be really popular, and it would be something that I would really enjoy. But again, I pulled away thinking it wasn't serious enough, or whatever I felt I had to do. And they were literally like bold, like just coloured backgrounds with weird looking dog portraits. And again, that was really, so I think I just went in and thought, I'll go into some shops and see what, you know, if anyone's interested in having them. And I did. So
that's impressive. I think for a lot of people, you, because it is as simple as that, really, isn't it? It's as simple as having the nerve and going and doing the thing. But I think for a lot of people, they wouldn't entertain the notion. Whereas what's the worst that can happen, really, if you ask a local shop to put up your work?
Exactly. And I think I'm still not good enough at things like that. I think I still get the fear, and just with anything, it's like, oh, well, I won't do that because maybe it wouldn't happen. But you're right. It's like, what is the worst that could happen? And I am fully qualified. It's not like you've just gone and chanced it. You know, spent a long time learning your career. And I remember not having the balls to go into a gallery in Portobello, that I was with my ex at the time, and I think I must have had my portfolio on me for some reason or whatever. And he took it in for me, and they straight away went, yep. And I had my work in there, and I had a giant portrait as you came in the doorway of this gallery called Apart. And it was such a lovely gallery. It's not there anymore. It's now Gail's, but he moved to LA. but I'd love to get back into there. But yeah, I think it is just all about taking the chances. And...